thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Stand by, Kim.
Here's John Williams.
I may need you to think a big thought. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon. And on social media, it's WGN King John. Look for me there. Boy, we posted a lot of fun pictures yesterday from our little Halloween bash. WGN King John.
So fun.
I want to be king someday, and that's not about me. That's about you. Hey, listen, so there I was going to reheat my pretty old coffee this morning, and I went over to the microwave oven, and I opened it up, and there was somebody else's lunch in there, and it had already been heated, but they hadn't come back to retrieve it.
Did you take it out?
I did.
That's fine. And set it to the side?
I know some people take great offense when you move their food.
But that wouldn't bother me. I mean, and if it gets cool, reheat it.
Okay, so I thought I was the culprit of what you were going to say about office etiquette.
What's the mistake you've been making?
Well, I like popcorn. And I also don't know how to cook popcorn
properly. And you just made some, didn't you?
Burnt popcorn is a sin against humanity.
Oh. So I get that, but every microwave is different, so it's hard to gauge how
many
minutes.
You got to monitor that, girl. You got to stand there and watch, and when that thing stops popping, you got to pop that out.
I did, but listen, it still comes out burnt because...
I love burnt popcorn.
I do, too, but...
It smells up the whole joint.
I like the smell. When I walked in here, smelled of it, and I liked it.
Okay, so I thought that everyone was going to yell at me about the popcorn smell, so I'm glad that that wasn't the issue. But you didn't take my popcorn out, right? Because not all of it got popped correctly.
No, I did not do that.
Okay,
but
good.
I did take somebody's mac and cheese out. And I just felt a little bad because I'm handling your food.
Well, did you take a bite of it?
Just a little one. And I put it to the side. And then I put in my coffee and I removed that before the person yet came back to get their mac and cheese. And I just know that that's verboten in some social circles.
Yeah, but if you don't attend your food, it shouldn't be anyone else's fault for touching it.
I once got a nasty look and comment or three from a woman at a laundromat. It was the apartment laundromat in the apartment building we were staying in. All of the dryers and washers had been full, so I took her clothes out because everything had been done and then put my clothes in.
There's women's underwear in there, though, isn't there?
Well, I don't remember what exactly I was touching, but yeah, it's her towels or garments, and I was putting my fingers on them. But, lady, you weren't there. And, like, I've got to stand around and hope that somebody's going to come back and free up one of these machines. I'm here. You're done. I took it out, and I...
Wait, did you take it out of the dryer or the washer?
Excellent question. I don't think I would have put wet clothes on the table there, so I probably took them out of the dryer.
So and put them in a basket?
Put them on the common table where you fold them.
In a pile? You didn't fold them for her, did you?
That would have been worse, although in my mind that would have been okay, but at least I folded them for you.
Right, that would have been like a really nice thing
to do. Been a
if
lot
somebody
more
came
touching.
Back and my clothes were folded, I would be like, oh, thank you.
The woman that came back was not thank you.
And well, how long had she abandoned her clothing?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know she wasn't there when I got there. But I would say the lapse time was, let's say, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
To touch them?
I think,
I mean,
I think
don't take pleasure in it, but yeah, you can take them out.
Once you exceed 10 minutes.
And rub them all over my face.
I think once you exceed 10 minutes, yeah. 15 minutes should be your maximum.
But I should be willing to wait 5 minutes, say, for the person to return.
No, because you don't know if they're coming back. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean,
I think there should be a little bell. It's like, okay, I'm here. If you can hear the bell, come get your stuff.
So and I don't know where that person was. You know, it was an apartment complex, so she may have actually gone back to her apartment. You know, it's like a 35-minute load or 45-minute load, so you go back to your place, and then you look and go, oh, my laundry's done. And so your timing isn't perfect. I'll bet there's an app for that.
But I doubt that it had only been 1 minute since the load had stopped.
Well, this feels good because I thought I had a lot to. I thought I was going to have to beat back the horde here. But it's okay for me to have removed her laundry from the dryer, and it's certainly okay for me to take in the mac and cheese out of it.
Yes.
And Kim, you're on board too. Steve, you're on board on that as well. Okay, that's all good to hear. Go ahead, B.
You just sat down. I don't know what you're talking about.
Fine.
Can I pop popcorn at work, or is that rude?
You got to do it right. I have no time for people to burn popcorn in the microwave.
Okay, but it's not burnt, but it still smells like popcorn everywhere. Is that bad? Is that really, really bad?
Let me put it this way. When I get to be king, you will not be allowed to bring KFC on an airplane.
Okay, but this is not an airplane. I'm talking just, about work.
It's similar. It's shared oxygen. And as much as we love us some KFC, when you get a bucket of that in an airplane, everybody and every air molecule smells like KFC. And maybe you don't want to smell like KFC. Same with McDonald's, actually. And Taco Bell should not be allowed in airports because people will bring it on the plane. That's the worst thing, where you're all kind of walking down the aisle and everybody's got their stuff. And you're like, okay, what version of humanity am I going to share a space with for 4 hours? And then somebody sits down with you with a great big Taco Bell bag and you go, oh, no.
What if they offered you a taco?
Nope. Nobody should be eating a taco on an airplane. Bob, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. Hello.
Hi. I'm a longtime condominium dweller. I live in a multi-story building, and I have no problem removing someone's clothing from a dryer or a washer if I waited 10 minutes. Yeah, there's no excuse for not being on time.
Yeah, 10's kind of long. I don't know where the cutoff is. But really, when the dryer stops, you need to be there, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you've got a timer on your phone.
That's true.
Why can't you be there?
It is so much easier now, right? You could just like set it for 45, get that timer out on your phone, 44, and then you're there when they're done. Hello?
I think
that's what I do.
All right.
What
if when I get to be still... King Bob, you're in charge of this entire area, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you for the phone call.
What if her stuff was still wet and she was just going to come and retwist it and put it for another 30 minutes?
Yeah, then I know.
Does she still have right to the dryer?
I think if the clothes, that's a tough one, because if the clothes are wet, then you shouldn't be touching. I'm all about the tactileness of this, but you shouldn't be touching other people's wet clothes. But if they're dry, I mean, they're coming out.
You know what I debated with myself the last time this happened to me? I almost, as a courtesy, because I felt bad taking their wet stuff out of the machine, I almost ran it through the dryer on my own coin. And then I saw the underwear and I thought, what if they get mad at me because their underwear got ruined in there or their socks?
Yeah.
So I just...
Well, so you took them out and put them on the table wet?
Yes, but when my laundry was done, their stuff was still on the table.
Oh, really? And then did you put it back in then?
No. Well, that's not my problem.
No,
you know?
I guess not.
So, this is what I would compare it to. You know how there's an express checkout line at the grocery store for 15 items or less?
Yeah.
It's that kind of common sense that you should have, that you should be there when your load is done.
What's the rule in the line? In other words, if you've got 16 items, don't stand in the line?
Yeah. Have a courtesy for other people.
630 said, it's pretty easy, it's pretty easy, keel and a half minutes for a bag of popcorn, and you can't go wrong. Boy, it's too bad they misspelled keel, because that's the most important word of this sentence. It's pretty easy. Something in a half minutes for a bag of popcorn, and you can't go wrong.
Same person that was putting in 90 seconds and confused why I was turning into a minute.
708, what adult is eating mac and cheese at work? 847 said, John, in our apartment building, we are allowed to remove someone else's clothes in either the washer or the dryer if they're not around. You know, I think that when I get to be king, I'm going to put that guy Bob, the last caller on, in charge of this. But I think I'm going to empower him to even take your clothes out of the washer if you're not there to put them in the dryer. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi, John. What about germs on an airplane and people who wear masks? I'm more and more thinking about wearing one because I always seem to get sick after I get off an airplane. I'm always getting the flu or a cough or something and it always feels like there's a correlation. I don't know. Am I crazy?
My understanding is the people that wear the masks are doing so not to protect them from your germs, but to protect you from theirs. That is, they're the ones with the cold and they are trying to keep from spitting it out. You know what I mean?
I used to think they were crazy, but the more I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about wearing one just to protect myself. I understand what you're saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just seems like with the air and you're stuck on the plane and we're sharing the air, it just seems like I always seem to get ill after I get off an airplane. Some, you know, either a minor cold sometimes or the flu or whatever it is after I've been on a plane.
Yeah, I know. These are moving targets for a lot of us. I see a lot of us kind of getting more and more like that. The first few times I saw people with those masks, I thought either, oh, my God, they're almost dying, or they're ridiculous. But I feel less that way now.
Not, I agree. I think it may be the way. Maybe in the future they should offer that before you get on a plane.
That's
or something.
Right. You get a little pillow, a little water. You know, they don't give you much these days. But would you like a sanitary mask? Not a bad idea.
So, Dr. John, do you get a virus from breathing it in?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay, so
but
I mean,
don't use that pillow. Yeah, someone's snot on it.
Well, I'm sorry, Steve, but you might get something from something, right?
No, I just got off a long flight and I had a cold. So, I mean, I get that, but I hadn't thought of it until now. But everyone talks about the air being recirculated, but I don't think you breathe in a cold, do you?
Thank you, Mike, for the call. I don't know the answer.
Yeah,
why are you making it so hard, Steve?
If
you
put
a mask on is a good idea?
No.
I mean, I think it's a good idea. I just don't want to be ridiculous and I don't want to have a mask on my face.
Well, you can be both.
Who cares what other people think? Come on.
Oh, I do. I do.
You shouldn't. You're a radio show personality.
Exactly. But no, really, I mean,
if you catch a cold on a plane, I'm thinking it's not because the person behind you is sneezing. It's because you're touching the armrest that's infected or something.
Oh, well, I think that, okay.
So a mask might not help you, except
somebody
it keeps
who knows
you...
how you get colds call, because I think you get it either way.
It keeps you from touching your own face. Maybe you wear the mask to keep you from touching yourself.
Ah, that's a good idea. No, I think that's it. I mean, really, that's what they say, is that you get the germs on your finger and then you're always touching your face with your hand.
But you might also be getting sick from jet lag. Your immune system is lower. You haven't slept as much. Like, there's a lot of different things that contribute to traveling.
But V, isn't that all the more reason to wear a safety mask like that then? To kind of keep, I mean, you know, anything that will help, right? No? Yeah. 708 says, hey, John, you are going to make a really weird king. But so what? I'm voting for you next Tuesday anyway. Thank you, 708. 815, fish in shared micros at work. Ugh.
I'm not putting fish, just popcorn.
That is so true. If we have a shared micro at work, Elif and I, literally, we share an office that is really small now. And listen, don't worry about me. I'm fine. I'm not going to complain about it. That's not what this is about. Anyway, Elif and I share a very small space here at work. It's larger than Steve's space. Anyway...
is larger than my space.
I told her when we moved into our new digs, I'm not going to eat my lunch here because we are so close, you're going to be a recipient of whatever it is I'm having. And now when I break that rule, I don't think I actually have ever used that rule, but when I do break the rule, I at least get an okay from you, right? I'll say, hey, I'm going to eat this tuna salad sandwich, right?
And, yeah, but again, I don't think you should care what I think about your food.
Oh, and this,
you're a human who needs to eat.
Who could do so in the public space that we have. We have a big common area here to eat your food.
Yeah, and Elif's looks could kill sometimes.
Oh, yeah, she can be.
I don't ever give you looks, though, right, John?
She doesn't give John looks.
That's all. Everything said just now is true. 312-981-7200. 219 said, John, when my daughter was in college in her dorm, the laundry machines would automatically send a text to let you know your washer or dryer was finished. Perfect. There is an app for that. 414, an Amish woman removed the clothes from a hotel dryer and she folded them. I don't know what Amish has to do with it, but I think that's... I would expect that from an Amish. 815, and thank you, Amish. 815... co-worker used to bring in Egg McMuffin and Chinese food. Stunk up the whole joint. Yeah, you can't. I mean, come on. That's just bad form. And I know you like to eat Egg McMuffins and Chinese food, but you got to find a place to eat it because other people don't want to. Brenda, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you? Hello.
Hi, John. I have to tell you, you are my very favorite WGN personality. Thanks for being back.
Oh, what a nice thing to say.
Well, you deserve it. I went, last year they had that horrible flu epidemic. When I was traveling by air, I wore a mask. I was the only one on the plane with a mask. I expected to see other people with masks. I was the only one. I did the same thing coming back. I did not get sick. But in the past, I have gotten sick right after an airplane flight.
I have three long airplane flights coming up, too, in the next 6 months. One to Mexico, to London, and one to France. And
you might consider a mask. Oh, and getting to the food thing?
Yeah.
Fish. Never do fish in the company microwave. Oh, my God.
All right, you will be
I think it stinks up.
You'll be in, when I get to be king, Brenda, you're going to be in charge of microwave etiquette.
Good. Thank you. Good
thank
luck.
You for the call. Like you, I guess.
So clean. You're flying to London?
Yeah. Oh, hi, Steve. So Socks on the Beach is my trip in the middle of December. Apple Vacations is sending me and some of us here and a bunch of White Sox players, you know, and a lot of you listeners. We're all going to go. Details at Apple Vacations or visit WGNradio.com/events. Next April, Brandon and I are taking a group to London and then Edinburgh, Scotland. It's the capital of Scotland, and we'll be in London, too. It'll be about 8 days over there, and details on that are at SteveBertrandTravel.com. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the website, SteveBertrandTravel.com.
I haven't really announced it yet, but it's...
That's the leak. And then, of course, I'm taking a Kelly Cruises group, Brandon and I, to Paris, up the Seine, Normandy, the 1st of August next year. We'll be there on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Not the exact date, but the 75th year. And, oh, man, does the itinerary of all of these trips look really fun. Details at WGNradio.com/something or another.
I think you should call Kelly Cruises. Along the Seine sounds better.
Up the Seine?
I don't like that.
No. Well, thank you, Mr. Travel
I'm
Expert.
Just, you know.
And you are a travel expert. Hey, Producer Elif, would you give us today's news click, please? We had one yesterday and one today. We didn't get to the second topic yet, but we might after this news. But here are our two latest news clicks. Go ahead, Elif.
Do you know who you're going to vote for? A. Yes, 96%. Yeah. B. No, 4%.
Think about that. I mean, I don't even think it's that interesting a conversation in Illinois. It appears that one of the gubernatorial candidates has a sizable lead. Our senators aren't up for election. House representatives have enormous incumbency factors, although maybe one of those races will be interesting. But by and large, folks have made up their mind. 96% of you are saying, I know who I'm going to vote for. All that money on TV commercials these days? I can't wait till Wednesday. Here is today's news click, Elif.
A downstate bishop spoke the truth to 5th and 6th graders about Santa Claus this week. A. 5th and 6th, they ought to know by now. B. To Catholic students, that's okay. C. Both A and B are correct. D. He should have kept quiet.
What's your answer to that, producers, or Mr. Bertrand in the newsroom? Was it okay for the bishop to speak the truth to the kids about Santa Claus?
No.
So you would be D.
I mean, again, they're of the age when it shouldn't have been news.
Well,
but,
that's why I'm C. It's a Catholic school.
Stay out of it.
And they're old enough.
He yeah, said but you're not supposed to talk to anyone about that. Once you know, you know. And that's it.
He said that they shouldn't even go trick-or-treating. You know, I think that's taking your Catholicism a little too seriously.
And that's not what Catholicism is about.
I know that any faith should be taken as seriously as the faith. If it's a tenet of the system, then you should believe that and exercise that. But really? You're going to go there, Mr. Bishop, downstate? This is John Williams. We were just talking about some trips that I'm taking, and I don't know how we even got into this business of people that wear face masks when they travel. And does anybody know what we're doing here? Anyway, just a couple of texts. Hey, John, and everyone, I just don't want to be that poor. 'Cause the other thing we're talking about was people who, shared space etiquette, office etiquette. Is it okay to remove somebody's lunch from the microwave at work when they're not there and put your stuff in? Now you're touching and handling their food, which led to a discussion about can you do that in a shared laundry in an apartment building? And maybe that's how we got on to shared spaces and the face masks people wear on airplanes these days. John, I just don't want to be that person. So I babysit the laundry and I discipline myself to wait. I get home and that's when I eat potentially fragrant food too, says Sue. John, 773, forget the mask. Wipe down the seat area with antiseptic wipes. 630 said, yes, you absolutely can get a virus from breathing it in, Steve.
Oh, I did not know that.
From the water, it's from the spit that you sneeze or cough.
It's the fluids.
Yeah,
but they're airborne through, so it's not
right.
The air per se, it's the fluid in the air.
So for them to say they recycle the air, that's not really what's getting you sick.
Correct.
It is the person behind you sneezing on your...
And so this is a physical barrier to that, right?
Well, you have to still take your mask off to sneeze.
Hello, John. I guess you don't have to.
Why would you? You don't even. It's beautiful. You don't have to cover your mouth.
But that's
you've got a mask on.
I know that, but that is the purpose. My understanding is that many of the people wearing the mask. Okay, I'll just tell you what I heard. Maybe the times have changed. They do it because they are sick. They don't want to make you sick. It's not so much you not wanting to catch their spittle. It's them being courteous and not launching it on you.
Well, wouldn't it be fun to have a cold and be in a crowd and sneeze with a mask on and not cover your face?
And go, hey, I'm covered.
It's okay.
We're
There's
cool.
Nothing comes out.
I can't wait to get a cold. I'll run out and buy a mask and then mix with people.
Stuff comes out, but, I mean, it doesn't get out.
Hey, we're having fun here.
The mask is not that tight on your face.
Hello, King John. I'm a tech at the laundry industry. If you take another person's clothing out of the dryer or washer, be prepared for an argument when that person comes back. Yeah, that's a thing. You do not. So then they come back in and they look around and they go, oh, and then they look at you and you're just looking at your shoes. You know, I don't know who did that, Bob.
No, you have to just be like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see. You know, you weren't around, and I got to go.
219 said, hey, John, I wore a mask last time I flew. No one seemed to care, but my family made fun of me. 847, okay, guys, Google it. Viruses can be airborne. 608 said, I carry wet wipes when I travel, and I clean my area in an airplane, especially the remote in the hotel room. I guess that's one of the ickiest places on earth. And I'm not even a freakish germ-phobe person, said 608.
Isn't it weird how if someone stays overnight in your house, it's, you know, well, they're going to sleep in our bed? You know, that's kind of an odd thing. But then you go to a hotel.
And so many people have slept in that bed?
Every night over and over.
Yeah, but you know, this is the way the women in my world are. They take off the sheets and they wash them all over again.
So how many women are we talking about, John?
I just think that if I slept in your bed, for instance, if my brother comes over, and if he's staying over, say, Brenda will take all the sheets off the guest bed
and put on
fresh sheets. He's fine. He's fine. The bed's fine. It's okay. God almighty, we sleep in the same bed many nights in a row. You know, not hundreds, but a few nights in a row. We don't change the sheets.
So when we were in England a few weeks ago, Noah's improv team from Miami, Ohio, 10 of them, they all came and stayed at our house because they did a trip to Chicago.
Yeah.
So we had like 10 or 12 college kids staying in our house.
Oh, how much fun.
I know. And we weren't there. And so some of them slept in our bed.
Oh.
Well, what's the point? What's the difference, though? I mean, we were in hotels where people were sleeping.
I know that, but then did they strip the bed afterwards?
I'm sure we did.
Yeah, you can't sleep in the same bed as somebody else after. You don't have to strip it before, but you should definitely wash it after.
You can.
You can.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm.
Well, you don't mind your own stuff, but you don't want other people's stuff.
Uncomfortable.
630 said, hey, John, my wife was horrified when someone folded her clothes in a laundromat. She rewashed all of them and almost cried about someone else touching her unmentionables. 815, flew to and from Orlando, which is the city of my children. I was sick for 3 weeks with a bronchial infection. I am all about the mask. 708, most people think it's the air they breathe on the airplane that gets them sick. That's not true. Airplanes have great air filtration systems. It's the surface you touch. And this one says there's a vitamin supplement developed called Airborne, designed to protect you when you fly. I've been taking it every time I fly. I also take Emergen-C daily. No colds for 7 years. Emergen-C is a staple for retail workers. You can get that IV solution, that IV infusion. You guys know about that? You can get infusions now when you travel, and it sort of refreshes you.
You mean, do they do it when you come back, or?
You can do it either way, but I've done it before. You come in, they put a bag of saline solution with some vitamins and stuff in there,
right?
And they hook it up to your arm, and it costs like $100, and then you go on your trip, and you feel you have less jet lag.
There's a business in River North that does that, I know.
I know, and I think they should advertise it on this radio station, because we got a lot of travelers. And you know what else is a niche for that market?
Hangovers.
Yeah.
New Year's Day.
Yeah, right. You go get the IV.
And we've talked about it before in the business lunch, and then people say it's like it's a little open secret in the medical professions that they all give themselves IVs.
I've heard that. Yeah. They go, yeah, we do it all the time.
Well, maybe we're just making stuff up then. I don't know. But
no. Well, I mean, I've had that conversation with a company that does it too, Steve, and You know, it's so funny because you stick a needle in my arm and you're running some fluid through me, and I'm just like, I'm not comfortable with that. And they're so du jour about it. They're like, it's fine. We'll put some saline in there. We'll squirt some vitamin C in there, and you know, what spinach, whatever's in these things, and you're better for it.
And you become Popeye.
John, when you get on an airplane, make sure the air is turned on going across your face. It will be the filtered air the entire flight. Oh, lots of tips here. We're getting hundreds of text messages about this, and I'm going to stop reading them.
But even just touching that little fan thing is probably dirty. You got to ask your neighbor, hey, would you mind turning that on?
I can't reach that. I'm 6'8", but I can't reach that.
Sharon, I'm ready to read now. Could you turn the light on for me?
Something a little bit like that.
All those women in your life turning on the lights?
Women in my life.
Yeah, I shouldn't have used that phrase.
No, you should have. It was great.
You know, I'm always trying to be careful, and then I make things worse. For instance, I said just a moment ago that somebody in my family has gone to Balnandra's Ketamine Chicago. Wasn't somebody in my immediate family, but somebody from out of state has come there and used that facility.
Oh, who was it? Why don't you just tell us?
I know. So I don't know if I've helped or hurt my cause here, but I will tell you that that really is a nice facility. And just one more time, since we brought it up when we're talking travel, if you want to travel with me to Mexico, Apple Vacations is sending me and Elif to Mexico December 9th through the 16th. And as it gets colder now, you know the nice thing about that trip?
Dying to know.
I know. Well, I'm sorry you guys aren't coming. If it was up to me, you'd all be there. VU went with Ro to Mexico last year.
You can never have too many trips.
I think you guys should come, but that's not how it worked out. I have no say in this thing. The nice thing about the trip isn't that we'll be at this all-inclusive Mexican resort. It's that we won't be here. You know, it's just the getting away from it, from the news, the pressure, the day, the life, just...
Yeah, I don't know. I think the all-inclusive Mexican resort might be the nice part of it. V, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say so, too.
I'll be eating and drinking a lot, don't get me wrong.
Unlimited salsa.
And then in April, Brenda and I are going, and I'll have the same feeling about it. It'll be a completely different location. We're going to London and then Edinburgh. Now I'm focusing on that place, Steve.
Edinburgh.
I'm not sure that's right.
Not necessarily borough, but Edinburgh. Oh.
See, there
Edinburgh.
It is.
Edinburgh.
Gesundheit. So we're going to go there, and Steve Bertrand Travel is how to get tickets for that. That's an amazing itinerary. And then we go to Paris for a couple of nights in August of next year. KellyCruises.com has the details on that. And we'll travel along the River Seine to Normandy and back. How much fun does that sound like?
Man, I'm just trying to get to Lake Geneva for a weekend.
So travel with moi. Only on the Mexican trip do we do the show. In Mexico, we'll actually be doing the show every day to kind of rub it in your face, guys, that you aren't going to be there.
No, but doing the show from a remote like that is so much fun. I think for the listeners, too, you kind of get away to a tropical vibe if you turn on your heat.
After the news at 2, Dan Sheridan comes on. He's a spokesperson for the National Center for Constitutional Studies. At our Teddy Roosevelt show, we're handing out pocket constitutions, this time for the kids. I love this idea. We've been doing this the last few shows that we do with the president on stage, where I interview him and you ask questions too. And so it's good to know what the Constitution is, particularly when Jefferson's there, since it was his buds that wrote the dang thing. But we're going to do it for the Roosevelt show as well. And boy, the timing just couldn't be better for us, because suddenly everybody needs to know what the 14th Amendment says and what does it mean. We're going to give you a constitution when you come to the show on November the 10th. We'll be in Elgin for a 10:30 show. I just want you to come. You'll have so much fun. You will laugh so much. And you will learn so much, too. I cannot think of anything else like it. And it's become my little civic calling. I never intended to be this person or have a thing like that. But these presidential conversations have been that way. And Sarah, who works with us here at the radio station on our events, came into my office today. And she was writing up a little blurb for some purpose. And she said, John, what is the number one thing that you want people to experience when they go to your Teddy Roosevelt conversation? An unscripted conversation. He and I talk on stage for about 40 minutes, and then you ask questions for about 40 minutes. And I said, this is my hope, and this is the most rewarding thing about these. You feel good about being an American. Maybe you always have, maybe you always will. But you really feel good about being part of America and what that means. So that gets just, you know, stuff like the Constitution, what the Founding Fathers talked about. But lo and behold, the topic on this show, we're going to ask Roosevelt to talk to us about leadership and what does it take to be a great American leader. And he clearly was that. And you just come away feeling so like, you know, if you don't like that congressman or if you don't like this president or that governor or whatever it is, that's okay, because you're going to believe that America is greater than any single individual. And that we have gotten through better times and worse, and America as an ideal is still unique in the world, is still a light in the world, and that's us. I mean, that's, so I'm telling you, I haven't done the show yet, but that's the feeling I've always come away with. And then, you know, when you do a show with Thomas Jefferson, you kind of have to pull out views, beliefs, and stories. Roosevelt's stories, every single one of them should be showstoppers for anybody else, but it's one after another. This guy's life is unbelievable. There's a story in the Chicago Tribune today. Look at it if you've got the print edition. It's page 16. In his writings, Roosevelt talks softly. You know, carry a big stick. They have released 276,000 documents about his life. Letters, books, papers to and from him. They talk about how he lived in the White House. He had a pet bear, a bear on a chain in the White House. The bear added zest to life in more than one way, he remembered. When we took him to walk it, it was always with a chain and a club. And when at last he went to the zoo, the entire household breathed a sigh of relief, although I think the dogs missed him. Seeing that on stage in person is really fun. How do you get tickets to that? WGNradio.com/events. I hope you can come. By the way, thanks for holding. Diane, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you?
Hi, thanks, John. Hey, I just wanted to comment on a remark you'd made about 25 minutes ago now, that the elections were not that interesting or highly contested in Illinois this year because of not having a senator or governor race looks like it's already, you know, out of reach for one of the candidates. And I just wanted to mention that out here in the western suburbs, we are super excited in both the Illinois 6th and the Illinois 14th, really highly contested races where we've got two new Democratic candidates that are looking to, you know, take the seats of some existing Republican.
That's where Joe Biden,
right now.
Joe Biden out there, I think, and there was in the fourth yesterday, right, at St. Charles?
It was, yeah. Joe Biden was out here for Lauren Underwood from the 14th, and then Sean Casten, who is running for the 6th, was also at that event, and it was really packed and a lot of excitement out here. I've got butterflies just thinking about the election next Tuesday. I'm so on edge about it, you know, because it's really important.
Amen to that. And I guess all politics are local because where I am, it seems like everything is fairly decided. And obviously our News Click listeners all said that they've already made up their mind who they're going to vote for. But I guess for you, pins and needles until Tuesday, right?
We are totally on pins and needles. And I mean, I've been volunteering for Kasten's campaign, and I have a lot of friends that are working on Lauren Underwood's campaign. And, you know, when I do my door-to-door canvassing, there is a lot of undecided people. There's a lot of uninformed people, which was a little bit of a surprise. But, yeah, I think that there's still a lot of people out there that are on the fence about who to vote for out here.
Interesting. Hey, I'm glad you waited. I'm glad you called. And stay tuned. We're doing a lot of election coverage on Tuesday night. You'll hear it all here with Patty and the gang and Andrea on Tuesday evening.
Okay, thank you. Really appreciate all your guys, support of all of it on the radio all the time. So, thank you.
Thanks for the call. John, do you think that your successor in 50 years will be doing a stage performance with somebody doing Donald Trump? And 847 said, Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to protect your ugly old president from impeachment from a person who I don't think listens all the time.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
But we do.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, I'm John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3. Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Like us on social.
Lord have mercy.
Instagram, Facebook, the Twitter. It's WGN King John. We post a daily web news question, too. We call it the News Click. Here is today's News Click question.
A downstate bishop spoke the truth to 5th and 6th graders about Santa Claus this week. A. 5th and 6th, they ought to know by now. B. To Catholic students, that's okay. C. Both A and B are correct. D. He should have kept quiet.
I believe C is the correct answer.
What is that they were Catholic students? Why does
that's
that
That's what somebody said to me. Well, I'm sorry. Am I mistaken here? It would seem to me like if you're a religious leader and you're talking to your children about the meaning of December 25th, it's not about Santa Claus.
No, well, but I think you shouldn't even mention him.
They've been doing both for centuries now.
It's not his. I mean, what is his job? Like, you know, I remember, the secular and the religious, and he's the religious.
And actually, St. Nicholas was the inspiration.
Well, then he can talk about that, too.
But when I was a kid and a little altar boy, and Father Gregory, we'd all go over to the rectory on Christmas Eve to get our presents from Santa Claus, he said.
Yeah.
Santa Claus has left something for you.
Yeah, well, so then somebody needed to straighten him out.
Doesn't this bishop downstate?
I know.
I mean, is he reading the clippings?
I know he doesn't. And he also said, and by the way, you shouldn't be celebrating Halloween, which to me is, again, I know there's a religious reason for that, but really? Really?
What is the religious reason for that?
I don't know.
Devil worshiping?
I don't know what it is.
All Saints Day, kind of.
Whatever. But so, but if I'm like, okay. I'm a Catholic leader. We really need to sort of repair our relations with our community. What's a good idea today? I know.
What's the future of the church? Let's go rip on Halloween and Christmas with the kids.
I know. So you get to vote. Steve's going to go with D. He should have kept quiet. But by the way, maybe the most important part of this conversation is 5th and 6th graders, right? 5th and 6th graders. Although in the paper today, there's a dad downstate in Belleville, where my sister and Jimmy Connors are from. And he said, you know, this really ruined it for my family, this 5th or 6th grader.
Well, the thing is, too, I think at 5th and 6th grade, you start to learn. You might know something, but you don't talk about it because it's like this untold common knowledge of, you know.
It comes in like a tide for a lot of us.
I don't know the whole context of his address.
Everyone's supposed to just play along.
I know. I think that some truths in life are revealed to us in a moment and suddenly our world has changed. And other things kind of come in like the tide, and eventually you realize your views or beliefs have changed.
And then
something.
You fake it for a few years to keep the gravy train going.
And then we're cool about it.
Right.
Can I just press pause on you guys for a second?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'm going to anyway. I just received a frantic text message saying, kids are getting out of school now.
I know.
Please edit your Santa discussion.
I believe.
Well, we haven't said anything.
I think we've been editing it nicely. Hey, kids, Santa Claus is real and is important. And it's important. I want to talk to Dan Sheridan for a second. He has been a friend of ours and a guest on this show and with me on stage many times. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, John. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
He is a spokesperson for the National Center for Constitutional Studies. Hokey smokes. Your job one right now, my friend.
That's right. Especially this time of year, right?
Not only this time of year, close to the election, and close to another presidential stage show with me. You're always there for us when we talk to Thomas Jefferson or to Teddy Roosevelt, and you come on stage first, and everybody that comes to our shows gets a free pocket constitution. But this year, the constitution itself is very much in play, what with the president's words of late. So tell us about your initiative. What do you folks do?
Well, what we do is we're a non-profit organization, also nonpartisan, and our one goal is to distribute pocket constitutions. And our goal is to get one into the hands of every American. And our most recent efforts have been, we've created a pocket constitution designed for children. And we've also created a cartoon video series to go along with it. And our goal is to get it into the hands of parents and into the public schools.
Now, you're in the Chicago area. The National Center for Constitutional Studies, where's that out of? Where are you folks based?
Well, it's based out of Idaho. National Center for Constitutional Studies is based out of Idaho, but this program is through Freedom Factor, which is an offshoot of the National Center for Constitutional Studies.
And is that a partisan organization? Are you guys batting for one team or the other?
No, Freedom Factor is a completely nonpartisan organization. We don't promote candidates or anything like that. Our goal is just to educate people in the United States Constitution, and that includes the amendments, by the way, which a lot of people wish didn't exist. So we teach the entire Constitution, including the amendments.
Well, sure. I mean, the amendments are part of the Constitution, right?
That's true. That's right. But there's been a movement in recent years to pretend like everything before the 13th doesn't exist. And that's a problem. And our goal is to show that not only is what the founders did important, but what the amenders did is important. And that includes all those amendments, and they're just as much a part of our history and as important. And unfortunately, a lot of times you only get one side of these things, and our goal is to show people this is our history in this document. And boy, we couldn't live without the 13th Amendment with slavery being eliminated and then equal rights coming after that and women's rights to vote. And it shows how we've improved over time. So our goal is to get people to be literate regarding the whole document in its context.
Yeah. Well, maybe it doesn't matter what you or I think about the 14th or the 15th or the 21st Amendment, but are you...
Yeah.
I mean, everybody gets, it's all of our Constitution, they're all of our amendments, and we all get to think about them as we will. But are you suggesting that people interpret some of these latter amendments differently, and that's bothersome to you?
Well, what's bothersome to me is when certain people get a hold of this document and try to divorce it from its historical context.
Yeah.
And, we've heard it, in the last few elections, how people say, some of the 13th and 14th Amendments are the biggest problems. Well, why do they say that? And usually they take it out of context. And so my point is that unless you teach these amendments in their context, why did the amenders act the way they did? It's just as important as why did Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and George Washington act the way they did. And the amendment process is very important, and that's why we want to, that's why we developed this children's series, these children's constitutions, because we really want to set the tone with the young people when they're young, that they need to be taught the basic, the basic rule of our country. They need to understand unity and kindness because they're the future guardians of our liberty. And they're the ones who are going to be amending this Constitution one day, because I'm sure there's things we need to improve upon. And that's why the Constitution doesn't have a the end after it. There's that white space there because the next generation is going to have to, there's going to be more amendments one day. We want to educate this generation and the next so they can be wise enough and smart enough to make things better.
What's the website for you guys, Dan?
It's freedomfactor.org, and if they would go there and see our latest program under the resources tab, the Constitution for Kids, we're really hoping that people will get copies of these, and also they can donate to a school fund because we provide these for schools and teachers, and schools also can request them for free. So it's through donors who help out with that we get these programs into the local schools.
And everybody that comes to our Roosevelt show is going to get this new one for kids. It's the same Constitution, but annotated a little bit easier for kids. So what a good idea. Go to WGNradio.com/events, get your tickets to our Roosevelt show, or visit freedomfactor.org. All right, Dan, as always, good work. Thank you for your time. I know I won't see you this time, but we'll make sure we hand them out for you, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it, John.
You may have heard us talk about the Constitution before with Dave Schultz. He's a constitutional law professor. Hi, Dave. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you today?
Really good. He's at Hamline University. I got just a couple minutes, but I just want to make sure if the president or somebody, the president thinks he can do something by executive order and birthright citizenship. We all understand that that can't be done. It would require a constitutional amendment. You and I are on page with that, right?
Correct.
Okay, so then the question becomes, how do you amend the Constitution? Tell me my eighth grade civics is right. There's two ways to do it. You need to get two-thirds of the House of Representatives and two-thirds of the Senate to approve a bill to amend the Constitution. And if they do, then it goes to the states, and three-fourths of them have to agree. Is that it?
Correct.
Or what
else? And then there's also a provision for a constitutional convention where if we get two-thirds of the states to call for a constitutional convention, they then adopt something, and then it's and then the convention is called, and then if it's ratified by three-quarters of the states, it can amend it. We've never used the constitutional convention process so far in the United States, so that the dominant mode is the Congress two-thirds ratified by three-fourths of the states, and that's in Article 5 of the Constitution.
So this is the way we changed the drinking age. This is the way we gave women and others the right to vote. This is, I'm just trying to think of some of the latter amendments, but we've always done it that way.
We've always done it that way, yes. Yeah. So things that we would put in there, we've given 18-year-olds the right to vote. We've given women, we abolished slavery that way. We adopted what? The Bill of Rights that way. You know, the First Amendment, rights to free speech, et cetera, et cetera. That's the way to do it. In our country, the Constitution, and the Constitution says this, by the way, Article 6 of the Constitution says that the Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land, which means it's at the top. And about as bedrock of a principle that we get in law is that anything that comes into you have to amend the Constitution to amend the Constitution through that formal process, and B, anything that is contrary to the Constitution is unconstitutional, if that makes sense.
Sure.
If you know what I'm saying here.
Sure. It's not the law.
And so, for example, you know, let's say Congress were to pass the law. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech. Let's say Congress passes a law and says that John Williams and David Schultz can't have a conversation about, I don't know, about the weather. Would that be unconstitutional? Of course it would be. Yeah. So the Constitution's pretty clear on these things.
But when a bill passes the House and the Senate, the president or the governor, but the president could veto it. Would the president have the power to veto something that went through this amendment process?
No. That's interesting here, but no. I mean, there's some presidents who've insisted on signing off on constitutional amendments, but it's more ceremonial. Because also, once Congress passes something by two-thirds, that's enough to overcome a presidential veto anyhow. So once Congress does it, it's up to the states at that point to do what they want to do.
All right. I'm also reading from a website here, and it talked about at usconstitution.net. It says there's something called the informal amendment, and that is where over time we interpret something differently. So, for instance, the Constitution gave people the right to vote. It says here, but originally they only intended that for white males who owned land. But eventually they interpreted that more broadly. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, they may not be accurate in the sense that the Constitution originally actually had no language about voting rights whatsoever, and it was mostly by amendments. I think a better example becomes, if I were to turn to you and say, since everybody's talking about Alexander Hamilton now, we'll use him. If I were to turn to you and say, what did Alexander Hamilton think about the Internet? And you would say to me what?
What did Alexander Hamilton think about the Internet? I would say he would say it was a great idea. I don't know.
Right. But the one I'm pointing is that, or censorship on the Internet. You know, he might say, I don't have any idea what the Internet is. The point that I'm getting
That's what I'm getting at here.
Sure. Is that we sometimes have to figure out, well, you know, documents 230 years old, you know, how do we apply this to the contemporary times? And sometimes might have to say, okay, and that's the interpretation that's being referred to there, is that we have to figure out, you know, how to apply this language to circumstances that the framers may have never envisioned. For example, telephones, telegraphs, the Internet, the social media, radio shows. I mean, this is stuff that the framers never thought about. So we have to figure out how to do it. And sometimes the Supreme Court in its interpretations is sort of saying, well, this is what we think it means now.
Yeah, so that becomes an informal amendment to the Constitution. It's our,
exactly,
our current understanding of it. But otherwise, you've
exactly
got those two ways, the convention, or you go through the House and Senate, and then back to the states, and the president has no say on it. Okay.
Correct, right, right. The other thing I want to mention here, and I know we're running out of time probably, is that our Constitution is a power-conferring document. You only have powers that the Constitution explicitly gives to you or it's implied. And the reason why that's important is that there's nothing in the Constitution that either explicitly or implicitly says that a president has the authority to issue executive orders to overturn the Constitution or to amend it. That's about as a bedrock principle of constitutional law as you can get. It's funny I mentioned this because when am I off to go teach in about 25 minutes? I'm teaching constitutional law in a law school. So this is pretty bedrock stuff.
Since the Constitution doesn't give the president to override the Constitution, he therefore does not have that power.
Absolutely correct. Unless the Constitution explicitly says or it's necessarily implied, and there's nothing to indicate either of those here.
It's nice to talk to you. Oh, to be a student of yours someday. I guess we kind of are on the radio, but thank you for your time, Dave Schultz.
Anytime. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Hamline University professor of constitutional law. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. By the way, we recorded the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's free. Wow. Thanks for that, John. The Mincing Rascals is a roundtable with Steve Bertrand, with Patty Vasquez. I'm there. Steve, Eric
Scott
Zorn
Stantis.
And Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. Sometimes Justin Kaufman, too. Anyway, we kick around current events, local and national, and obviously that often involves things the president is saying. And we had a pretty rousing discussion about this birthright citizenship thing. I'm going to do a different topic in this half hour, Steve, but I just wanted to mention that because I'm getting texts like this. Hey, John, far be it from me to support anything Trump says, does, or wants, especially the citizenship thing, but I think he could make a case that birthright citizenship only applies if at least one of the parents is a legal resident. In other words, it doesn't apply if both are here illegally. No, it doesn't. That's not. You read the 14th Amendment. It says if you're born in the United States, you are a citizen. It could not be clearer than that.
Well, the Rascals, if I can speak for the Rascals.
And then you started to laugh at my direction on this topic. It's why I bring up the Rascals.
Right. So this week it's about two things. It's about, I mean, you could have the argue or the discussion over whether or not this is a sound policy or should be changed. Or you can have the discussion about the president saying he's just going to do it 5 days before the election by executive order. And
that second part doesn't really merit a lot of conversation because he can't. But the is it a good idea the way we have it, I thought, is at least interesting. I've always thought, and I'm not about to change it, and I don't see the harm in having it the way it is. But it is kind of weird that neither parent's a citizen, but the kid is by virtue of geography. So let's have that conversation. That's not the conversation the president's asking us to have, though. He said he can just change it with a magic wand.
Right. And the point is, I don't think the president's truly interested in us having the conversation.
That was what you said.
He's interested in ginning us up before we vote.
Look at me. I'm all ginned.
You're always ginned.
It's 2:39. Hey, listen, it's also enrollment season for your insurance. And I got a couple questions about that. The Democrats are running on the issue of health coverage, more so than obviously the Republicans. Immigration is their issue right now. But is there really a difference one from the other if I'm casting a vote? And what should I know about my insurance options or costs these days? So we reached out again to our friend Elizabeth Rosenthal. And she joins us on WGN Radio as the editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome back. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Look at all the stuff we're talking about, Elizabeth.
Yeah, big day.
Where should we start? What's the most compelling thing about health news from my perspective, from a consumer's perspective right now?
Well, I think the most compelling thing is that costs continue to rise and networks continue to narrow. So as you know, we've just begun open enrollment season on the individual market today, and people have to kind of be in buyer beware mode, which is really a shame. And I think, you know, you're going to be hearing a lot in these elections about, well, we're going to protect pre-existing conditions from the Republicans and the Democrats. And I think we have to, like, get below the surface and say, okay, what are you going to do, actually? The ACA did protect people from pre-existing conditions, from being ripped off or not being able to have insurance. The Republicans have said they're going to guarantee it, but haven't really set up a reasonable plan. So I think, you know, that should be a big issue for people in their voting. And in their insurance choices, well, I think we should all be asking for better. And I we're hearing a lot about Medicare for All, Medicare expansion, Medicaid expansion. Depending on where you live, there are a lot of issues that affect health care that are on the ballot now, and I expect will be increasingly important over the next couple of years.
Well, what's the status of the ACA now? The Congress voted to defund it. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the irony is Congress voted to defund parts of it. The Republican attorneys general are suing to basically remove that pre-existing condition clause is not valid, or that the whole ACA is not valid. And meanwhile, those same people are often running for Senate or Congress saying, oh, don't worry, we're going to protect pre-existing conditions. So I have yet to hear a plan on the Republican side that if we repeal and replace the ACA would do that. So I think that's something to be really wary about. You know, we've heard lots of politicians promise, oh, we're going to bring down drug prices, for example, and, you know, I'm not seeing it.
No, although I do appreciate the president's bully pulpit on that. He sure has tried to push, humiliate, or embarrass them into that, right? I mean, he is trying to force them to lower drug prices. Do I not read that correctly?
Yes, you do read that correctly. And, you know, bravo in a way for talking about that, for using a bully pulpit. But, you know, I think we've seen in healthcare that bully pulpits and embarrassment only get you so far, and that far is not very much. So no one really is taking the bigger steps, for example, saying we're going to allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, or that we're going to let people import prescription medicines. I mean, we ran this fabulous story this week about the state employees of Utah, the state giving them $500 to go to Mexico to buy drugs. You know, that's bonkers, right? That is a symptom of a really dysfunctional system in the U.S. that, yes, he's using the bully pulpit. Yes, they're trying to get generics to market faster. Yes, they've suggested putting prices on drug ads, all of which are, you know, fine ideas which may have some impact. But, you know, this system takes more than a bully pulpit. It takes you know, kind of a perp walk or a, you know, something really dramatic.
Or a new act. I mean, so we are currently governed by the Affordable Care Act, though, right?
Mm-hmm. We are. You know, there bits and pieces of it have been taken away by the Republican interventions. However, it still exists, and, you know, good for it for surviving, because people generally many people have been helped by it. The problem is there's a segment of the population for whom, and those of us in the private market too, for whom insurance prices are still rising, who don't get subsidies. Your employer's probably asking you to pay more of the premiums. Your co-pays, your deductibles are getting up. So, you know, the Affordable Care Act was never a solution in and of itself. It was a start. So I think we need much stronger regulation, enforcement, scrutiny to bring down prices all across the board, and also to give us better health care options. You know, we're hearing more and more about these very narrow network plans and these high deductible plans. I would tell buyers to beware, because you're going to get a lower price initially, but it may not cover you very well, even if you have a minor illness, like you have a baby who gets sick. If you have a high deductible plan and that baby goes to the emergency room, you could have to pay $7,000. And so not for anything extraordinary, just for ordinary medical encounters.
But that's the age-old thing, the debate between premiums and deductibles. But you would argue, you would advise people to buy down as much as you can your deductible, right?
generally, but, you know, I understand that premiums in some parts of the country have gotten so high that people are buying what they can afford, and what they can afford may not be very good insurance anymore.
Well, are costs going up or down generally on the insurance market?
It's very site-specific, meaning some places they're going up a lot still, some they're going down, some they would be going down more if some of the ACA provisions that were kneecapped were still in place. So I think we're seeing a settling out, and over time we are seeing prices being more reasonable in many markets. However, that often comes with an extremely narrow network plan. So you have to be really careful. I have a guide that I put up on Twitter today, and from my book about how to buy insurance, how to think about whether this plan will suit your needs. So I think you have to be really careful. You buy a cheap plan, and it only lets you go to one healthcare system, but maybe these days all of your doctors or two of the ones you really care about are not in that system anymore. You just got to be really careful, and it's a terrible burden to put on patients, but that's where we are this year. Hopefully, if people get out and vote on health care, we'll be in a much better place in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, how many people are actually buying insurance through the Affordable Care Act? That is, I have Blue Cross. I have a nice company. We have a nice plan. I pay a lot for it these days, but lucky me that I can afford it, and I've got that. What percentage of the population is actually having to go through the ACA, through Obamacare?
Well, it's a pretty small population at the moment. I mean, I think it's 15 million, something like that. So it's relatively small. A lot more people got insured through the ACA through Medicaid expansions than through having to buy on the individual market. Although I do suspect that a lot of people who have jobs or who would prefer to have an entrepreneurial career have not gone into that individual market because the options are somewhat lackluster compared to employer-based insurance. So I think that's still a huge problem that we have to solve. You know, people still feel job lock. I don't feel job lock. I love my job, but I am so grateful that I don't have to shop every year for insurance, that my employer does most of that groundwork for me.
Well, that's the thing. As much as there's conversation about the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, I've often felt that that's important, but far more people are not affected by this conversation than are. Mostly we're getting it through an employer or some group, and we're not doing it through the exchange. And so then I think the question becomes, okay, well, what should I anticipate when I get my new opportunity to sign up now? Am I going to see an uptick through Blue Cross Blue Shield, say, or Cigna? Am I going to see that go up probably this time around? Do you have anything to say about
that? I think you probably will. I think, you know, you'll probably see premiums go up. You'll probably see deductibles go up. To some extent, one thing that's interesting that's been happening is those really high deductible plans, we're seeing fewer of those offered by employers this year, probably because employees, you know, they heard from their employees, wait a second, I'm being stuck with $10,000 in medical bills still. That's not okay. And in a tight job market, offering good insurance is a big deal, right? That's a big incentive.
You're right. And I mean, boy, everybody's competing for employees these days. It's amazing to me the things they're doing to try and get or retain good workers. Are employees starting to do what you just said? Say, listen, forget the raise or the ping pong table. I need more affordable health coverage.
Well, I think some of the, you know, the smart ones are, but it really shouldn't have to be a trade-off like that. Like here, I want to give my employees, both raises and good health insurance. I don't want all the raises sucked up by increasing health insurance rates. And you know, the thing I keep hearing and that I just feel like I have to hammer home again and again is, you know, if you're offered something that's cheaper, you got to check the network, because we as Americans are not used to being limited. And I hear from so many people who are surprised that, like, wow, I signed up for this plan, and I know last year that hospital was in this network, but this year it's not. So I think you just got to be, you know, it's just an incredible amount of work, but it behooves you to do it because you won't get stuck out later.
Okay.
I mean, and we have employer-based plans. We have, you know, I'm offered three choices, so you want to look at the same things there, but at least your employer has presumably done the initial vetting of what's acceptable, and if suddenly someone's out of network who was in network, your HR department will go to bat for you to resolve that bill.
Elizabeth Rosenthal is the editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News. By the way, how do I follow you to get that sort of tutorial you've got on how to best select insurance?
Well, you can do it just at Rosenthal Health. That's my Twitter handle, or in my book, An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. In the How You Can Take It Back section, there's kind of a step-by-step guide to how you should go about thinking about insurance purchases if you have to make them.
On Twitter, at Rosenthal Health, editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News, Elizabeth Rosenthal, R-O-S-E-N-T-H-A-L. Hey, Elizabeth, nice to hear your voice again. Thanks for helping us out today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Stay well. Ro Khan is in Studio A with Anna DeVlantis. Hi, campers.
Hey, John.
Hello, John. I'm confused. I'm confused by so much that
Poor
I see
Ro.
Here today. But in about 15 minutes, the president is asking everybody to pay attention to a short announcement he's going to make.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the theater.
At the White House.
Oh, the drama.
Get your popcorn.
And this often happens. White Houses say, all right, well, you know, the president's going to be available when he's on his way to the helicopter. He's going to do this. And then everybody kind of, you know, they decide if they want to take it live or not. But they're actually, they are suggesting that all the networks go live to him at 3:15 Chicago time.
What's he going to do, Ro?
I think he's going to announce a change in border protocol.
In what?
Border protocol. It's going to be a change in how you can apply for
asylum.
Asylum.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really affect all of us who are here right now.
Oh, come on, no. That's a wah-wah. I want something more than that,
really.
Well, he did announce, there's the announcement that Heather Nauert, now I predicted this.
You did.
I thought she was the prettiest of them, by the way.
Heather Nauert is now going to be the new UN ambassador.
Sorry.
Which you did call you called it after he said something like, well, I think that position has taken on a bit of glamour or something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
It looked like three candidates for
glamour,
Fox News.
And they thought Ivanka, Nauert.
Yeah. So I thought, well, if it's glamour, it's going to be a pretty girl, right? And so Heather Nauert now gets the job because she's
pretty.
Well,
it doesn't take away from her qualifications. Maybe he's impressed with her State Department, but it did seem like a strange.
She has a TV anchor.
That's right.
Like 3 minutes ago. That does not make you
and a spokesperson. So it seemed like she was on the media side of things. It's a very unusual post, to be sure.
Yeah.
With anything anymore, I don't know what it does require to do anything anymore.
That's true.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, I don't know. What are you supposed to do or be?
They made me, President Kinzinger or President Mendoza or President, I don't know, who could it be? Called and said, hey, Ro, we need you to be ambassador of the UN. It's the one ambassadorship that's not like a glamour one. This is one that is actually an important
role.
Yeah, role.
I would be qualified to be ambassador to Will County.
Yes, exactly
Like, I know that area. I know the people. After that, I'd be so intimidated by that sort of thing.
Uruguay for me. All right, thank you, John.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.